Welcome to this special episode, this timeless episode of Zapped to the Past. I'm Adrian Mills. I'm joined as always by Mr. Graham Raddings. And if you haven't listened before, this is a podcast where we discuss games that were released for the Commodore 64. And normally we use the magazine Zap 64 as a monthly guide for the games to focus on. But of course, we're not affiliated with that magazine at all.
No,
however,
we're not.
There were games. There were games that floated past Zap. They floated not through their transom. They went wide of the mark. Zap never looked at them. Who knew there were games that they missed? And in this special episode, we're going to look at six of those games. Six of those games that were never reviewed in Zap and bring you our opinions on those games. So, Graham, please tell us what those games are.
In the month that... Wait, hang on a minute. These games are all from the void. They never even made it to the pages of Zap. I wonder why. Anyway, so in this unorthodox episode, we go for an 8-bit exploration of Darwinian evolution and munch some big bananas on the way in the human race. We comb in a quiff and scoop back in time to the 50s, or is it the 60s, and cause a right old nuisance in the classroom in Mikey, and then sit our emotions for Tug and put our dragon piloting skills to the test in the tear-jerking, but maybe for the wrong reasons, Thanatos. As if that wasn't enough, we pop some Boney M on the turntable in our local disco and strut our funky stuff before crashing back down into the isometric nastiness of the C64 game Rasputin. We grab our best motorized totem poles, select some music from the silent jukebox, and try to hold on to our rage as we play the shocking arcade conversion of Super Hang-On before we finally, and not for the first time, head into the battle zones of the Transclownomorphs. We take to the C64 platforms and skies disguised as vehicles or robots in the early Doors version of Transformers Robots in Disguise, maybe. Anyway, there are quite a few games that Zap never got sight of. Not all of them are pleasing, though. This is definitely the tip of an interesting, if potentially predictable, iceberg. Exciting bunch.
An interesting bunch. They come from all years. We've been a bit random. We've just sort of picked ones. We've got a bit of a list going on where we're sort of picking up games and sort of things that didn't get looked at in Zap. And so they're not from any particular genre or...
No. They're just all forgotten.
They're all forgotten. The one thing they have in common is that literally these are the games that Zap forgot.
They did.
And so that's what this episode's all about. No cover to discuss. So I think without further ado, let's just get into it. Let's just go back in time and pick up the first of those games that Zap never thought about. And so our first game, you know, that Zap never looked at, is over to you, Graham, to tell us all about the human race.
I suspect there's probably reasons why they forgot some of these games. and now we've come to look at them and play them. Now, interestingly, a couple of things to note here. So this is a Mastertronic game, and this is at that time when they were quite known as Nastytronic or Mastercronic, wasn't it? Is that dirty cheap phase when they were dirty and cheap? Had the big M logo on the box, and it was a bit like, you never know what you're going to get, a bit like Russian roulette, wasn't it? This was coded by somebody called John D. Ferrari, which is a good name, isn't it?
We've seen him before. I'm sure we have. He did Hollywood or Bust.
I didn't look to see what other things he'd done. The title screen was by Jim Wilson, and the musician here is Monsieur Le Hubbard, or as we like to call him, Old Robobud. It's Old Robobuddy-Bubbuddy, isn't it? Robobuddy-Bubbuddy. So this was predate all of those.
Yeah, it does.
So the instructions are, unfortunately, in two different languages. So I can only go by sort of the aim of the game, and that is this. In the beginning, there was man, and a lot of very nasty problems to overcome. But man survived and lived to fight another day in the journey of evolution. Life was tough for prehistoric man, but he outlived the dinosaur by about 5 million years by using his cunning and skill and evolved further to tackle the ancient world with its classical problems. As time moved on, so life for man became more complex, for although many wild animals had been subdued, the battle for life still had to be fought. Man moved from the field to the factory, from the countryside to the city, but still obstacles had to be overcome. Now modern man battles in the computer age with massive technology at his disposal as the computer race continues to be run. Now play the game that took 35 million years to create. Controls, joystick. Right.
That's not helpful.
And then the instructions otherwise are instructions de chargement, and that's all there is. But I think they're actually just the same as the aim of the game in different languages. And that's all the instructions I could find for this. And I looked all over the place. I looked on Lemon to see what instructions they've got, and they just got the same thing.
Yeah, that's it. That's all there was.
All there is. Okay. So that's the aim of the game. So, all right, what's it all about then? The game is essentially several next to impossible connected caveman themed game levels, is the best I could describe this on sort of single screen. Level one is a single screen platformer type deal where you need to climb around some trees, jungle backgrounds, if you can, and eat bananas that are dotted around with the hope of finding and eating a big banana. After the games we've been recently playing. Anyway, I'll leave it to your imagination. Anyway, so in order to get to the next level, you have to find and eat the big banana, which is placed in a very difficult to access position. And you control your little, I guess it's a caveman monkey type thing, isn't it, really, at this point?
Yeah, you're a monkey. Yeah, you're a
prehistoric man, monkey man, ape. And you control them with a joystick, and you have to sort of try and jump, run, climb, want a better description, to get to the bananas. Anyway, preventing you from doing that is everything, really.
Yeah.
Multiple enemies will flap, fly, run around you and touch you. Touching them means instant death and a loss of life. If you do make it to the banana, you'll stop and take time to eat it. That alone will cause your death, as the endless enemies will rush to touch you at every opportunity. Giant flies, dinosaurs, etc., etc. If you manage to make it through that, and you won't want to, but if you do find yourself able to get to the big banana, you'll get to level two. This is some kind of screen full of travelators, rivers.
It's just weird.
I don't know. There's kind of pathways that you need to sort of walk and travel down that some of them work in specific directions and some are opposing each other. And the maze is kind of, the paths kind of form a maze type thing on the screen and kind of an isometric-y view. You've got to try and get to the exit on the right from your starting point on the left, but you won't do that because you'll die pretty much instantly because you can't, everything that you touch kills you except the path you're on. And there's fire blobs that seem to fly across and kill you anyway.
Yep.
So if you do manage to make it across that, you'll get to level three. And here you've got to cross a river and you've got to paddle on a log, I think. And I think you're progressively getting more human shaped as the human race develops, thinking this. I have to be honest, I could not get really to this screen. I got to this bit once by pure chance and I couldn't actually get the caveman to move or whatever it was to move on the log. I tried everything and it just wouldn't move from the left-hand side. You've got to cross this like river, Frogger style. It wouldn't move. It just froze in that position.
Do you mean the instructions of joystick only didn't help you?
Yeah. And I tried what I could, keys, moving. It just, nothing moved. It was just stuck there. So in the end, I reloaded the game and used one of the cheats on it that had a level skip so I could just skip this level. And skip, yes. To see what the other levels look like, because there was no way I could actually do them. The next level was kind of an isometric view of a cave, I think.
Oh God, this level.
The aim was to find your way to the exit, avoiding the giant spider thing. But there's also this kind of pogo tile thing. I don't know. I actually just ran into the exit and got out without any kind of challenge. It took me about 3 seconds. So I don't quite know if that was meant to do that or whether there was meant to be more to do.
There's a bar moving, and that when that bar is, what colour that bar is means those coloured checkers, if you step on them, you'll fall through them.
All right, I just ran across and got out.
You must have avoided that colour then that was...
Just I was instantly through it and the spider thing didn't get me. So I thought, I actually just thought I had to avoid the spider thing. So the other thing was neither here nor there. So oblivious to that threat, I didn't bother with it. Okay. Anyway, the final level is some kind of top-down race between you and a skeleton, I think it was. I don't know, the caveman thing started running upwards and I was moving and leaping around as things scrolled downwards. And then the skeleton thing kind of caught up with me and then I was dead within seconds and that was it. Now, I don't think anyone would have ever made it that far. And perhaps if they did, I don't know if they would have ever wanted to. The game graphics vary a lot here. They never really get good, though.
No.
There's a lot of high res, which is of its time. There's a lot of single color sprites of its time. It's common to that time period. The background graphics are all kind of characters as well. So it's very character font and character graphics. Not very nice to look at, all said and done. Maybe they look the part. On the first level, the jungle kind of looks jungly in that kind of high-resy way that those... It sort of works for jungle leaves, doesn't it? That kind of thing with the browns and the greens and that. And the animations on the monkey thing are okay. When he eats a banana, it looks like he eats a banana. And he sort of scrambles and clambers about. Okay, but the controls are really twitchy. So you find yourself not really moving in the way you want, not jumping at the speed you want, and you can never get away from anything. As soon as something's aiming towards you, you've got no chance. You're dead.
Yeah.
I made the mistake. I went to the ground, got the banana... And I was dead because something killed me, the fly thing. So I managed to avoid that, then got the banana and managed to avoid the Stegosaurus that goes along the bottom. Went to the bottom and then just like a panther just ran on at me. I was like, oh, this is just stupid, this game. It's so terribly difficult and so unpleasant to play. And then every time you die, oh God, this. Every time you die, this little animation that plays where this thing comes down the left-hand side of the screen with the title screen, with where your lives are a big counter, goes down, picks up the number 3, lifts it up in the air, then comes down, drops number 2. And it does this over about 3 or 4 seconds every time you lose a life. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, it's so tiring. It's like, it just holds everything up. It's so annoying after a while. I mean, early game design mistakes, you know, thou shall do no repetitive crazy during the in-between games respawns. But it does do that. Mm-hmm. The game levels themselves, deeply uninteresting and way too difficult to enjoy. They'd have been better just making this the first level and making it more of that. Making it where you have to climb around the trees and collect bananas and throw bananas at things. That would have been probably more fun. Instead of all this weirdness. So, and obviously, with it being so difficult, you might see level 2, maybe level 3 at push. I don't think you're going to get much further than that, though. You'd be dead and run out of lives way before any of that, because instantly, as soon as you touch anything, dead. And then that sequence plays, which will drive you crazy. I know it's $1.99, and all right, that's commendable at the time, but you know what? $1.99 is still a lot of money if the game's rubbish. It might be budget. It doesn't mean that it's good, and that means it's not good value. It's only good value if the game is good. So the $1.99 rule only applies if the game is actually a good piece of software for the money. Mm-hmm. So $1.99 for a very difficult, unpleasant game is not good value, is it? So I don't think anyone would have really been made happy with this. The game hates you and it doesn't want you to get anywhere in it. And that's clear. The only saving grace here is the music from Rob Hubbard, which, all right, it's using the early Hubbard sounds and early Hubbard player. So it's got that kind of early Hubbardy sound. It's interesting more than great. In terms of its music. And it does have different music for each of the levels, which is kind of the thing they did back then. So some of the music's good, some of it's okay. Famously, one of the pieces of music in this was used in a game on the Atari ST and the Amiga later down the line. I think it's called Gold and something. I can't remember the name of the game now, but it was used in another. Rob Hubbard reused his own music in other games. Oh. The music aside, which is all right, and famously part sort of classic in its own. Now, everyone remembers the Hubbardy tunes. I remember them more for the seeing them in demos where you could select Rob Hubbard music in the demos than actually playing this game with it. But that, take that out, and this game's a pig, and not a nice pig, an unfriendly pig that, you know, you probably wouldn't want to, you know, be around very much, you know, it'd be grumpy at best. So yeah, that's what I thought of it. I'm glad I avoided it, really. But did you enjoy the human race at all?
No. How hard is this stupid game? It's just so stupidly hard. Every level is just designed to destroy you. Yep. You've only got 3 lives to get through. There's no extra lives that I could fathom. So you've only got 3 lives to get through all 5 of these single screen nightmares. It's a task I will never do. It's just, you know, games are not hard these days, not when compared to stuff like this. You know, people go on about Dark Souls, it's dead hard. It's like, no, it's not. Go play this. This is nightmare.
Yeah, play Human Race. Yeah. No pain.
Because it's got awkward controls and it's, you know, weird pseudo 3D views or whatever. They don't help either. But, you know, whether you're trying to jump over massive dinosaurs, avoiding falling fire, trying to roll a log, going over an abstract checkerboard where the no-go colors are constantly changing. I mean, you must have been really lucky just to wander across. I died every time. It just, as soon as I moved, it went, oh, this checkerboard can't go on there. Oh, God's sake. Yeah, too stupidly hard. But great music. I really like the music to this. I mean, it's classic Hubbard tunes. And, you know, but like you said, you heard them in loads and loads of demos.
Gold Runner, that was the name of the game, by the way.
It's a good suite of tunes that elevate this game. You know, so people have heard of it. Because I think without those tunes, nobody would remember Human
Race.
Nobody
would remember it,
But it's got those other tunes. And once again, as we've said, when we comment on games and they're like, where's the music? It's like, well, this is what you can get if you get some decent music on it, sort of thing. But it's stupidly hard in every way. I like the idea of a multi-part journey through the life of humankind. I think that's quite an interesting, you know, concept for a game. But I imagine that, you know, Evolution probably want this hard.
It found a way.
Yeah, in and of itself, like the fact we evolved as we did over millions of years, it's not one this hard. Just don't make me experience it like this. I mean, I was thinking one thing that I sort of was going to suggest to you and think maybe we should do this is, seeing as these weren't reviewed in Zap, what you know, should we give it a score?
Percentage-wise?
Yeah, I was going to give this 38%.
Yeah, I think I would have been in the low, like upper 20s. So 20, 28, 29.
That's cool. We'll use the degree marking thing sort of thing. So if we're in 10% of each other, we're in the ballpark. So we'll split the difference and say like 33, 34. Yes. So because I like hard games, like Hercules, and remember that Hercules and stuff, things like that, which kind of have a logic. They're hard, but they have a logic. This is just unpleasantly hard. Yeah. So even at £2, this is, low 30s, 33%.
Yeah.
So we'll do the job that Zap never did, and we'll give it a score. And I thought something we might do for these games, but yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Human Race. Good Lord. Stupidly hard. There we go. That's the first one of the games that Zap forgot. Let's move on to our next one. Okay, so moving on from our jaunt through the time periods of history, we get to a more modern game with Mikey. This is Mikey from Imagine. Mm. This came out in 1986, and this is the home conversion of the 1984 arcade game that was originally from Konami. This was £8.95. In Japan, this was originally known as Shinryu Shane Torokun.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm sorry if I butchered the pronunciation there, but it is what it is. And it sees Mikey causing havoc around his school, trying to compose a message for his girlfriend.
Aww. So,
interestingly, in Japan, this setting was changed to an office so as not to cause controversy.
I can imagine it would there.
But the international release kept the school setting. Okay. According to the wiki, in Japan, Game Machine listed Shinryu Shane Torokun on their December 1st, 1984 issue as being the second most successful table arcade unit of the month. And in Europe, Mikey was a major success in the coin-op market during 1985, which is weird because I don't think I ever saw it.
I've never seen it in the arcade ever.
No, weird. And we had access to, and our arcades got pretty much everything in, didn't they? We had Cleethorpes and the big arcades down there. They always got everything in.
Maybe they had it somewhere in a corner, dark corner somewhere. I don't remember it though.
Maybe. The only review noted, because this didn't get reviewed in anything, the only review noted was his CVG in December 1984, which obviously for the arcade game, they just kind of said it was weird. It was very, very weird. Didn't seem to have been sent out for review. There's no Commodore User score, no Your Commodore, or any of the other sort of magazines from around the time that might have reviewed this. They just never seemed to get anything. I don't know why. Just never seemed to get sent out. So it seemed to have gone under the radar in terms of the magazines. But it is what it is, and that's why we're looking at it now. So what is Mikey anyway? The story goes this. You're Mikey. It's the 50s or 60s. I'm not quite sure.
Something like that.
The era.
Happy days era.
Yeah, and you have a new girlfriend and you'll do anything for her. To this end, you must collect love hearts from rooms around the school, which will help you spell out a message to send to her whilst avoiding teachers, chefs and janitors and other people from about the school. It's not much. But this is a single-screen arcade game from 1984. What exactly were you expecting? This was coded by Tony Pomfret. It's got visuals by Steve Waheed and sound by Martin Galway. Obviously, Steve Waheed and Martin Galway. Tony Pomfret did other stuff as well for Imagine an Ocean, and he did other bits and bobs. So it's the sort of part saying DC Ward was the producer. It's that core team sort of thing that we've seen quite a lot of around that sort of period of the mid-1980s for Imagine.
Yep.
The loading screen for this has seen Mikey go through a C64 thickening.
He has a bit.
He's been widened, and he's lost his 50s-style quiff, which seems to have been flattened down somewhat. But it's a kind of representation of the arc of the cover, which is sort of an angry chef behind him as Mikey sort of running out in front. It's all right. It's okay. The title screen, though, is nice and arcade-like. It's got a funky high score table that swaps to the credits. It's got a great arcade font. I think we previously might have seen this in Hyper Sports and other games like this. I'm not sure. It's double height though, so I'm not sure if it is. But it looks like those Imagine titles from around the time. It's got love hearts appearing at random in the background. It's cool. It's a cool title screen, this. What it also has is a great piece of music from Galway. Of music. Just reminding us just how bloody good he was. Because Galway does Chuck Berry. Now, I think I've got this right. Is this 12-bar blues rhythm? Is it?
Basically, I think,
Is it? Yeah. And it's got like guitar solos. It's just ace. Just a great tune, this. It fits the 50s, 60s style of the game to a T and really sets the mood for the entire thing. This is just really bouncy, jaunty, happy, this makes me want to play this. This is great. Pressing Fire gets a nice musical sting and we're straight into the game. Mikey himself is made up of five main levels set in various classes and interstitial levels set in the hallways of the school, where you have to make your way from one level to the next. So you complete a level, you head out the door, that's what you do. The five levels, you got a basic classroom, so your standard classroom with chairs and stuff around and classroom style. There's the locker room, the canteen, the gymnasium, and finally the schoolyard. Controls for Mikey are simple, really simple. Four-way movement. There's no diagonals here. So it's just up, down, left, right. And the object of each level is to collect all the hearts on screen. That's it, really. When you collect them all, this will cause the exits to flash with the word out. So the door at the top of the screen will start flashing with out. And then you can leave the level to navigate the hallways to the next one. So starting off in the classroom, the hearts are located under the seats of various students. And you need to go up to them from the side and then tap the joystick towards them to perform what's called a hip zap. Sort of knock them out of the seats. You do this three times and they basically move to another desk. Essentially, you start in a desk. So when you get up, there's an empty desk. When you hip zap someone, they'll sort of transfer to your empty desk. That's kind of what happens. You can then walk through the gap that they've left and you collect the heart. There are five to collect on this level. So it doesn't take long. There's basically bottom, there's all the corners and in the middle. That's it. So you've got nine desks. And that's what you, but to thwart you, there's the teacher. The teacher is after you. You can trick them though. So as soon as you get up, he'll start walking after you, he'll start coming after you. But you can trick him though by sitting back down. So if you pip swap someone and then nick their seat, you can swap that by pulling down on the empty desk. It'll cause him to wander off. It'll lose interest in you because you've sat back down. This is quite a nice touch. You know, that's quite a interesting sort of mechanic, really. You sort of, oh no, I'm just don't mind me. And he'll wander off in the direction of a student who has their hand up because they keep putting their hands up and he'll go off towards them. And it will allow, and then you can get back up again and go around collecting hearts. As soon as you get back up, he'll come back after you. Randomly, the teacher will pull out their massive false teeth and throw them at you.
Yeah, you got to be careful of that.
And that's weird. It's kind of weird. You've got three lives to complete the whole game. So that's quite tight. You only get extra lives for looping the game. So you have to complete the game to actually get an extra life. And should the teacher or the teeth hit you, then you lose one of those lives. The screen will reset and you got to do it all again. That's quite, it's hard. So you
arcade.
It's an arcade. It's arcade mentality. So it is what it is. You complete the screen, essentially just run straight to the right because that's the next room to go in and you get to the locker room. So what this sees is a number of hearts in lockers. To collect these, you need to stand in front of them or to the side of them and shout three times at them by pressing the fire button. So it's quite simple. There's a number of them to collect. Here, though, you're besieged by the teacher, the chef. There's the teacher, but now there's the chef and there's a janitor wandering around as well. Contact with any of them or the teeth, because you still get the teeth thrown at you. That's a loss of a life and a reset of the screen, and you've got to do it all again. To fight back, though, this gives you some ammo. You can pick up basketballs. There's three crates, the sort of baskets, and they've got three basketballs in each. And you can go up to them, stand in front, you press fire, and you can pick up a basketball. And then if there's someone coming near you, you press fire, it'll just throw it at them and stun them for a short time. This is quite handy. And you can sort of, you can quite easily knock them out and get to them. It's quite easy to get the first few hearts on each screen. It's when you're trying to get the last couple and they're sort of coming after you and you've got to sort of lead them around, and that's when it gets tough. Should you make it through this, then the corridor gets trickier as you need to make it downstairs to the next class, which is the canteen. Here, the hearts are on the floor and you just need to run over them. There's one on the table, though, that you need to shout at. Again, you're chased by the teacher, the chef, and the janitor, but you can fight them by picking up chickens and throwing them at them to stun them.
You can.
Make it past this and the next corridor, and we're into the gymnasium, where strangely there is a dance class going on. Six dancers move back and forth to stop you collecting the hearts from the floor, and the teacher who is after you once again. So this is kind of cool. The dancers move about sort of in loops and figures, and and if they knock you, they kind of stun you, which obviously lets the teacher get close. You don't want that. They don't kill you, they just stun you. You've nothing to defend yourself here, so you've got to have good reflexes. You know, you're running around, you're trying to get around them, and it's fast, everything's moving fast, and you've got to get past them. So there you go. Get through that. We head outside to the schoolyard, where we collect our last set of hearts, whilst being beset by a team of American footballers. There's like three American footballers, like 50-style American footballers, charging about after you. If you can manage to collect all the hearts here and get to the gate, when we get to see Mikey with his best gal, and a well done message. You spell out the message, and before we are taken back to the beginning to do it all again. So it just loops back and get an extra life.
Loopy loopy.
And that's kind of it. It's a simple game, single screen, and things to collect. But this plays very well. You know, in our recent episodes, we talked about games that don't play to the C64 strengths. This one does. This is just, this is almost what the machine is built for, apart from sort of scrolling. It just feels perfectly suited to it. And I'm happy to say that this is really good. I really enjoyed this. The gameplay is fast and the controls are snappy. You know, there's no slowdown. There's no thing. Everything just moves at a real good pace. And I really like that. The game screen gives you plenty of space to move around. It's not too cluttered. It's not as tall. Obviously, the arcade is taller, so they've managed to fit in. But it doesn't really feel constrained. It doesn't real no, doesn't feel that. Too cramped or anything. They've done a really good job in fitting everything in. And the UI at the top just takes up three lines. It just tells you your score, the message you're putting together as you collect hearts. Each heart gets a letter of the message and the location, along with the number of lives next to an American flag for some reason.
Nice and simple.
Yeah. There's no flickering of sprites. The multiplexer works really well when needed in the gym scene with the multiple dancers, because there's more than eight sprites on screen there. And although they never cross, you can see how they've done it. You've got two at the top, two in the middle, and two at the bottom. But they're all made up of two sprites, but it's perfectly smooth. And, you know, there is no flickering or anything like that. So that's kind of cool. The visuals are a little chunky. Mikey's been made to wear a yellow jacket, but it's a consequence of having a bright yellow quiff. He's made of two sprites. So the color for the top one, the multicolor one is yellow, but he's got his yellow quiff and he's got green trousers. But it just works. So it's a bit different from the arcade, but it works. Everything looks as it should, from the dancers to the teacher to the chef and the janitor and so on. Steve Wahee's done a really good job of, another good job of transforming those arcade sprites into C64 sprites and making and animating them well. Animations are decent. And one of the other best things about this is that Mikey's quicker than those chasing him. That's a really good thing. So you can get away from them. And that's really important to this game. If you were slower or the same speed, it wouldn't work as well. But because you're faster, you feel a bit more nimble and you can get out of the way quicker. Yeah. It's good. Throughout all this, we've got a great set of tunes from Galway, including a good rendition of A Hard Day's Night and Twist and Shout, which are really good as well. I didn't recognize the others. I don't know if they're real tunes or not, or just sort of original compositions in some of the other games. But they fit. They all fit with the overall musical style, this kind of 60s kind of rock and roll sort of style of music and sort of C64 Sid style. Now, I do remember playing this back then, but I never really got on with it. But I think it's because I just didn't really know what I was doing. I'd never seen it in the arcade and I had a hooky version of this. So I didn't have the instructions or anything. But once I had the instructions and played this, it's pretty simple. I've just got to get the hearts and knock them off the seats. So I just didn't know you had to knock them off the seats, I think, when I played it before. Because you have to kind of walk up to them, stop, and then tap to the right or tap to the left to knock them off. I didn't know that. So I found it fairly frustrating. But now I did. I got into this and I really was playing this for ages. I got to the fourth screen when I was playing this, because it is hard. That's the thing, it's hard. And this is from that period where Imagine ported Hypersports, Green Beret, Yeah Kung Fu, varying quality, but you know, there's some others as well. But I think this team, I think these people worked on Rambo. I think there's a lot of things like that. So you can see it. They had a really solid handle on the C64 and what they could leverage it to make these strong arcade ports like this. Imagine we're doing good stuff at this point. It's a fun game, this. It's a little hard, but it's five screens of arcade challenge. But I didn't find it overly punishing or tricky. And I also find it really quick to restart. You just hammer the fire button. It's also got the great high score entry as well, with that kind of vector graphic changing of letters, which I also like. But the found that deaths usually were of my own making, because I was trying to rush. You try to rush, you get into that loop of like not taking your time and rushing to get a heart. And you're like, should have taken my time. I was clearly not had enough time. That's my fault. But the other good thing about this as well is there's no time limit. So you can take your time on the levels to sort of, you've got a bit of like, right, okay, I'm not going to rush and think, you know, you can take your time. It's good. Solid arcade conversion of a really weird arcade game. So would I give this a sizzler? Would I give this a thingy? Maybe. Maybe there's not quite enough here for that. Certainly in the mid to high 80s for me, maybe even a sizzler for 1986, early 86. I don't know. I think it's really good. Really good game. I really enjoyed this. One of the best I played in quite a while. I just like these sort of simple arcade conversions done well. And this is done very well. What about you?
Yeah, old school anarchic single screen stuff, isn't it? Nice music, good graphics, fun gameplay. Difficult and challenging, not impossibly so. You can progress if you persevere with it. And the corridors are sent from hell themselves, but it's essentially good fun. And that's what's missing from a lot of the games. They go into serious and they just lose a bit of the fun. Remember that it should be fun. So it can be a little bit forgiving here and there. You can get caught up on things maybe, but you know what? That doesn't matter. You've got scope to run around. It's quite clear what you have to do. It's what these old arcade games were great at. There are a little bit of nuances in this, obviously, but you could read the principal idea of the games. You collect a heart, you see the letter appear, you think, right, I've got to do more of that. Right. And then the word out appears above a door. You're like, maybe I've got to go there. And then you see when you go to the stairwell that there's a door that says in on it. You can open the other doors. I revealed a naked lady who screamed and got angry with me, it seemed. So there's some good fun to be had in this game. I thought the graphics were pretty good for the time. They look like characters and not just amorphous sprite blobs or shapes. There's a mm-hmm. there's a characterization to them. They look like people. The teacher looks like a teacher. He throws teeth at you. There's different students and things going on. They look like classrooms and corridors. It looks the part. If you think of games like, what was that crappy Spectrum game where you were in a school?
School Days.
Think of School Days and something like that, and then compare that to this where you're in a school. It's just not the same thing, is it? I like the way the characters moved around, all at a pace, plenty of them too, like you said. All looks and feels great. A good little game, this. Quite accomplished, actually, for its time. And the music as well, of course. Well, it's Mr. Galway, isn't it? So it's going to be very good, very loud, and very frequency rich. Mm. So I enjoyed what I played here. I thought it was good. Nice to go back to games like this when games were a bit simpler, but fully compact and all there and ready to rock and roll. Surprised me that it never got reviewed in Zap or anything else. That's a bit of a surprise, an omission, really. Bit of a classic from Imagine, really. Certainly in their league of greats. So it's in there with the Green Berets and the Yao Kung Fus and the others. You know, this is when Imagine were doing good stuff. Later on, of course, they know when they got usurped and everything else, not so much. But this was back in the day when they were producing some really interesting quality arcade conversions. And here we go, here's another one. A great single screen puzzle arcade game conversion. Fab stuff. I really enjoyed it. And what's not to like? And even if you don't like that kind of game, load it up for the music because it's just great to hear a bit of Galway blasting out from the SID every now and again. And this is another great, great tune by him. So it's got great things going for it. Certainly reminds me, we go through playing some crapola in the 90s. And it reminds me that there were some really great games back in the day on the 64. And this is one of them. And one I didn't have a lot of time for because like you, I had it on a tape somewhere. I think this is one of the first games I had on a tape with a few others. Loaded it up, didn't quite get it. And I was like, there was other games that was perhaps more interesting to me at the time. Mm. Green Beret and stuff like that. But playing this again, I was like, actually, I quite like these kind of arcades nowadays. So it's quite good fun to that. Mm. So yeah, good stuff. All good. Yeah, great. Go play it.
Indeed. There we go. Mikey. Go Mikey. We like that. Mm. Go Mikey, you're so proud. Whatever it is.
Yeah, not that.
Not that. Right. There we go. Mikey, we like that. Let's move on to our next one that Zap never looked at. Graham, it's time for you to, be the dragon, I guess, and tell us what it's like in Thanatos.
All right. Thanatos. So this was published by Durell. Concept was Mike Richardson. This is from the Spectrum, essentially. This was a Spectrum game first, Mike Richardson. It was coded here by Rod Barrington. Title screen was Jane Richardson, such as it is. And the musician here was Rob Hubbard. So he did quite a few of the old Jurel ones, didn't he, Rob, at a certain time? Anyway, mm-hmm. Thanatos then, just to give you a bit of the blurb, it says in according to the instructions, this is only the blurb off the side of the box. I couldn't find full instructions for this anywhere, really, but it says, in this magical game, you take control of a dragon, Thanatos the Destroyer, whose eternal destiny lies in conflict with the forces of the underworld. The dragon, which is very large and superbly animated, flies, walks, swims, and burns its way through the landscape. It must collect a beautiful young enchantress, Eros, who then rides on its neck and guides it through the castles to collect the Book of Spells and find the magic cauldron. On their way, they have to fight fierce knights armed with lances and foot soldiers with longbows, as well as a variety of weird mythological creatures. The game features fantastic landscapes with a totally new panoramic scrolling action. They did a lot of that back in 1985, this came out. So
yeah, I think the C64 is 87.
Its heart is a Spectrum game, and it starts off with a sort of a loading screen. And there's a fairly dreary title screen. They've got Thanatos right at the font. At least they've taken time to create a font, albeit that it just looked like they slipped when they did one part of the corner of the letter. So they're like, I'm just going to carefully draw this out. Then he made them jump, clearly. So the Thanatos, right, looks like somebody made them jump and they were carefully creating the last little bit of the corner. But okay, it kind of works. And then you can alter the skill level if you want to do that. You can alter the playing reps, I think it says, is it? The playing reps?
Keys.
Oh, sorry, alter the playing keys. Sorry, I've got a tiny view here. So you can alter the playing keys. You won't do that. You can view the score table. Maybe you'll do that. And you can press number four and you can play it. Okay, since you select one of those and off you go. And then the game begins and really, well, I'll describe it. So what you'll be presented with is a sort of a view of a nighttime scene. At the top, you've got kind of a moon, and that sort of goes down towards, at the beginning anyway, towards a lake. This changes to sort of different scenery as you scroll along. You'll see a giant dragon on there. You won't see all of it because its tail's almost always sticking off the back of the side of the screen because they didn't think to draw it far enough into the middle, which is stupid. But anyway, so you've got this kind of dragon there. And then at the bottom, you've got a UI. The UI looks like a Spectrum UI because that's what it is. So you've got Thanatos writing in a different typeface, never a good thing. Then you've got the UI in the middle, which is a series of zigzags. Underneath that, your score. To the left of that is a heart, which beats, which is your lifeblood. And on the right, I think, is a timer because I think you've got a certain amount of time to do this to get to the certain points. I don't know for sure because I wasn't playing it for very long.
It's your flame power.
That's your flame power, or even worse. So you control Thanatos the dragon with your joystick, and you can put, I think if you push left, it slows him down, but it looks like he goes forward.
Yes.
And if you push right, it speeds him up, but then he looks like he goes backwards. So if you go too fast, it's like he's almost flying off the screen, which is really, it's really dumb.
Yeah.
It's really dumb. But this is to give the kind of scrolling effect at the bottom, which is meant to be this fancy scrolling thing they mentioned. It's meant to give it some kind of parallax type depth, but it doesn't really work. It would have worked better if there had just been something in the like stars that just moved as you dragon flew. That would have given you a much better sense of movement across this sort of view. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't have been necessarily more based in the physics, but it would have looked better as a game. But it doesn't do that. So you end up flying this dragon. There's a really nice reflection of the moon on the water, but no reflection of the dragon or shadow, which is stupid because there would be, wouldn't there? So didn't think of that, did you? So instead of the spectrum graphics of the dragon, which, you know, they look quite big and it is a big dragon, instead of that, you've got the C64 equivalent, which is big and well grown, I'll give it that, but quite badly shaded and not very well animated in a game that's kind of semi-famous for its kind of large scale dragon animation, I guess, on the spectrum and the other formats. The C64 one doesn't really do it that well. It animates and it flaps and you can control this dragon. You can move it up and down. The ships that sail across the river at the bottom initially, and you can burn them, set fire to them with your breath. And then you, later down the line, you can actually turn your dragon round. I never actually successfully managed to do that, but you can slow down and turn it round and face the other way. And you can get to land and you can land and walk. Yeah, you don't want to do that. I landed and started to walk and was dead within about 2 seconds, and that was it. Game over. It didn't take long. And so the idea is that you can fly along, can land. You'll get a rider eventually. And then, and like it said, you can sort of just keep going to the right and stuff will happen. You end up coming up to a castle at one point and then you have to walk through a certain thing. And this is like an adventure with a really cumbersome, uncontrollable, blocky dragon to contend with. And that's kind of the blessing and the curse. The idea of controlling a dragon in a game, the idea of doing that and it being a big dragon sprite, and it's quite detailed for what it is. It looks like a dragon as you imagine one in the game. And at this time, it would have been quite interesting to see, especially on some of the other formats. But in this one, it looks okay, but it's nothing special. And it's not like it's mega shade or anything. It's just green and kind of grey. So it's sort of two colour. And then all the other sprites in the game tend to be not as good, not as well coloured. So they look kind of more spectrum-like. So single colour sprites are running about and this thing's throwing sticks at you and things like that. And then when you do decide to use your fire breath, it's not really very fire breathy. It's just like it's going, ah! It's like it's just coughing at them. It's not. I was expecting a jet of flame to shoot out. No, Game of Thrones style. But no, it's not going to be that, is it? So the point of this game is to fly a dragon over a dreary landscape, jerkily flapping with some crap flame effects. Well, that ain't Game of Thrones, is it?
No.
So I get what they were thinking of. This was like in their minds that I think this looked completely different to what actually came out. In their minds, they envisaged this beautifully animated dragon flapping its wings and soaring across the sea and this moonlit scene, these boats sailing in and getting set on fire. And I imagine in their minds, they're like, this just looks so beautiful as a game. And then when someone showed them the C64 version, they went, ah, goodness me. That's not how we imagined it at all. So aside from the large animated dragon sprite, that seems always too far to the left for me. It's really did my head in. Every time I played it, it's just like the tail was always sticking off the side of the screen. It's like, just put it in the middle. Why can't it be in the middle? Why does it have to have this stupid way of flying off the thing? And the graphics are a very mixed bag. The dragon controls really slowly and lumpily as well, which is a bit unforgiving in this. Mm-hmm. I mean, okay, it's a big moving dragon, but it sort of doesn't move in the kind of, it doesn't soar through the air majestically, does it? Kind of, like, it's not very pleasant to play.
But
I'll
get you, dragon. I'll fly you. I'll fry you, butler.
And using your fire breath, like I said, it's like he's got bad breath and he's just breathing garlic on them. He's like, it's like, I was like, flames, setting things on fire. You know, and the 64 can do that. They could do sprites and
I
fire.
I thought it was going to look like the animation from the fire-breathing things in Antiriad.
Yeah, it could be like a giant flame. Or even if it was fireballs, that would work.
Well, I've written that, yes. Yeah, it could be fireballs anyway.
But that's partly the problem with the whole thing. The pace is so slow for this that it's almost falling asleep slow. And the game is not interesting because of that. There's not enough happening on the screen at any pace, which leaves you feeling like you're just kind of flapping a dragon around. And as much as that sounds like fun, it really isn't. There's neat touches here and there. The picking up the little men that throw rocks at you and throwing them and dropping them and that sort of thing. Then maybe there's little touches that are okay. But when it's sort of, if you were swooping down and it was this really fast movement, but it's like clumsy the dragon's coming in. I get you with my glories. You won't. No, this is not good. This is Barney's bloody adventure, this. It's not good.
Pete's Thanatos.
It is like Pete's Dragons Thanatos. It just feels like the game has no magic. It has no magic, this game. And a game about dragons should have kind of a magical feel to it. You should, if you're controlling dragons and things. Bear in mind, up to this point in the movies, dragons have had a pretty good run. Now, most dragons up to this point, you've had pretty good dragons in things, generally speaking, right?
So, Dragon Slayer.
That's what I mean. So you've got a good pedigree. I mean, maybe some of the others aside, maybe there are some crap ones, but Cue the Winged Serpent springs to mind more for this one, really. But it's just in a game that's got this magical sort of wishy-washy, this kind of emotional music about it, which is weird. The tone for the game feels completely at odds with what the game is trying to be. So if this is an adventure game where you're flying an exciting dragon, the music lets it down, the game look and feel lets it down, the graphics are all washed out and colourless, and it's really boring and you're just flapping about. Well, why is that good? Why am I not just setting fire to villages and burning things and picking things up and really fast and speedily? The answer to this would have been to just make the dragon smaller. You don't need to be this massive dragon. Make it smaller. I'd have settled for a shoot-em-up, a side-scrolling shoot-em-up with a dragon. But I had really well-animated wings on a couple of sprites, and then just I was able to fly down low, fire fireballs at the villagers and watch them running screaming, and that would have been perfect. That would have been a good little shoot-em-up game that you could have done. Defender with a dragon, essentially. What's wrong with that? Mm. Perfectly good. But we don't get that, do we? So this could have just been way better. I don't know. With no magic, this game feels like it's a game about a dragon that lacks everything else about it. That's all. That's as far as they got with the game idea. This is more of a kind of burn 'em up, but without the burning. So, I don't know, sticking to the big dragon thing, I think that's really what's held them back here. It just felt like a dull, scrolling, flapping lizard with nothing much to do. So I didn't like it. And I didn't like the music either. I thought the Rob Hubbard music was a dreary dirge, which was about as emotional as a lettuce on fire. And that isn't emotional for me. So that's it. I don't like it. Thought Thanatos was a real letdown. Probably a good thing that Zap never saw it, really. They'd probably given it a really good review. What about you?
Reminded me of Earth. So what's the other large scrolling one where you were the guy with the sprites that weren't quite joined together running left and right?
Oh god,
you were sort of running left and right in that sort of sci-fi complex.
Oh, Trantor.
Yeah, the Sammy Hagar game.
Yeah.
But that same sort of thing, isn't it? It came from the spectrum, big thing, but they like spent all the time getting the big thing animated and then, oh, where's the game?
Yeah,
don't know.
Forgot about game, yeah.
Yeah, after all the fun and games offered by Mikey, and this is a great thing, isn't it? You look at something like Mikey, how fun that was, how simple it was, but how much fun it was. How do you make a game where you control a massive dragon so boring?
Yeah.
I mean, it's to their credit that they've not just made it look like the Spectrum game. So fair enough, they've actually taken the time to make it look like a C64 game, and it was. So I didn't mind the dragon. It's okay. It's fine. There are some nice visual effects, like you said. The moon reflecting in the water, I think, is quite nice. The parallax is quite good when you go over those sort of spate of rocks and they come past in five levels. That's quite good. And they've used correct colours, you know, like we said previously, you know, the blues and blacks to sort of make it look like it's at night.
Yeah.
Fine. Yeah, that's good. But it's so dull. It's so dull to play. It's so boring. I nearly got killed by birds flying into me. I'm a bloody great dragon.
True.
They just wouldn't even. I wouldn't even notice them. But no, then. But to get better, I've got to take a rest on the floor and let my heart slow down. That's how you get your health back. You have to have. It's like basically. It's like the reason this dragon can breathe fire. It's like because he's a smoker. He's got to stop every now and again. He's like.
I must cut down.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where's my vape?
You just talk about sapping all the fun out of this. I don't know if you ever played a game called The Getaway on the PS2 or the second one. Black Monday, I think the second one was called, I think. But in that, right, it was one of the sort of early open world games, and it was basically like a gangland third person shooter set in London. And you had to drive around London in your car, and when you got to a place it then turned into like a third person sort of action adventure type game, and you had the, you know, cover shooting type stuff. But when you got shot, the way you got your health back was your main character, he had this suit, grey suit, and it'd get covered in blood, and you had to just stand against the wall. And he's just standing against the wall with his hand against the wall going, whoosh, whoosh. And you have to do that for like about a minute or two to get your health back. It just killed all the pace because all the guys would just be waiting around the corner for you to come back to start shooting them. So it's just a stupid mechanic. And they've done it. I thought that was the first time I'd seen that. But no, they did it here. But there you go. It's a stupid mechanic. It's really ridiculous. Just games got better at it. Uncharted and stuff like that where you duck down and the grey screen goes back out. But they do it much quicker. You don't have to just stand there. I don't get it. This could have been a decent shooter, yeah. Give me a fireball. Have it and give me a fireball to shoot.
Yeah.
Not the sort of pathetic little bit of flame that comes out. It's a game. You know, make it fun. I found this deathly dull. I would have scored this somewhere in the 30s or 40s, probably. I mean, for 87, I suppose the visuals are quite nice and atmospheric, but it's just nothing to play. You can get to the caves without doing anything.
Just
keep flying. Fly as fast as you can. You'll get to the caves.
Yeah.
And then just take a breather every now and again in the caves and you're through. It's just nothing here to do. It's barely any game. I didn't mind the Hubbard music, but you're right. It doesn't really fit. It has a bit of sort of do-do-do. It's a bit sort of mystical, but it's just a bit of a misstep, this game. It could have been quite interesting and quite decent, as it is, they're just do-do-do-do-do-do. They forgot about the game. Do-do-do.
Yeah, they did. They forgot about game. They did.
I really did. There we go. Thanatos. What about you? 30s, 40s? Where would you put this in?
Oh, yeah. Low 30s. I didn't think it was that good.
Yeah. There we go. There's Thanatos. No, we didn't like being a big dragon, and we should have. You should have
enjoyed that. Should have gone to Radio Reynolds.
Should have. Right. That's that one out of the way. Let's get on to our next one in our list of games that Zap forgot. And our next game in those games that Zap forgot is Rasputin. This was £6.95. But if the loading screen for this is to believe, then this is actually not Rasputin, but Hot Rasputin.
Rah, rah.
And that is a whole different kind of game. Oh, yeah.
Russia's greatest what? Love Machine.
Love Machine. Hot Rasputin. But at least we do get the same loading screen as the Amstrad and Spectrum version, which is weird. It shows some huge face zapping lasers at a hero on some kind of stone bridge.
Yeah, you won't see that again.
Who knows? Anyway, this is Rasputin from Firebird. Lemon has this listed as coming out in 85, but Moby Games has the release date as February 86. And the reviews in CMVG, Your Commodore, and Your Computer Magazine are all in April to May 1986. So I'm guessing it came out in 1986, probably. Mm. And all those magazines gave this a good review as well. So let's see what Zap were missing out on. This was coded by Paul Hibbard, originally for the Spectrum and Amstrad. The C64 version was ported by LT Software. And it's the only thing I could find listed for them. I couldn't find anything else under that name, mm-hmm. So I don't know who they are. The music is, of course, by Rob Hubbard and is very, very good.
Yeah.
A bit later. But what's this game all about? So this is what the instructions say. Rasputin, the Crusader's Quest. You must destroy the jewel of the seven planets, which is the power source of the spirit of Rasputin. To reach the jewel, you must neutralize the eight spells that have been cast in Rasputin's name. To neutralize the spells, traverse the courtyard of your dark side and enter the netherworld of the seven planets, crossing from dimension to dimension by means of the spells cast by the Lord of Chaos to prevent the escape of Rasputin's spirit, which is threatening to cross the barriers of time. You have the magic power of your sword and shield, but their power wanes like a candle every time you use their might. Find the stones within the mark of Rasputin, and by stepping on them, you will absorb their power into your sword and shield. Absorb the power of all the stones in the dimension, and the wrath of Rasputin's mind is revealed in the form of a creature from the dark side. Destroy this creature, and it will be transformed into a spellstone inscribed with the Rune of Power. These runes were cast by the Lords of Light to aid you in your quest, and may be absorbed into your soul upon contact. The most important spell is that of the Eyes of Heaven. This spell will protect you from the spirit of Rasputin's evil eyes and allow you access to the boxes that neutralize the eight spells cast in Rasputin's name. But the power of the Lords of Light will only protect you if the colors of the dimensions are in harmony with the spell. Step on these boxes to reverse the spells cast in Rasputin's name from the dark side to that of the light. Until you achieve the quest, you are lost in the eternity of time, your life force being drained by the creatures of the netherworld. I don't know.
What?
That's what
jibber jabber is this?
Then that's it. That's all you get. There's nothing else. This sounds intense, but I just imagine there's some...
Oh, there's definitely some weed whacking going on.
Lords of Light, spells, dark... Oh, good Lord.
Yeah, exactly.
The title screen gives us a good idea of what to expect. It's the first screen of the game with single colour, high res, kind of isometric visuals and slow moving balls moving around the level whilst the face of Rasputin looks on upon us. There's also scrolling instructions and credits at the bottom. And of course, that music has started. So we press fire to get going. And now I don't think this is fully isometric, is it? It seems to have more in common with the view we get in sort of Staff of Karnath, I guess, and Entombed. So it's that kind of view. But we control an armored warrior. And the controls are simple enough, I guess, with left and right. So this is tank controls. Left and right to turn our player 90 degrees in either direction. Up moves us forward in the direction we are facing. Fire makes us jump forward. And down raises our shield. And then pressing fire when doing this makes us stab out our sword. You must pull down first before pressing fire, or else you will jump and most likely die. Because I kept doing that. On this screen, there's a series of stones, and it's got Rasputin spelled out in the Cyrillic alphabet. I looked. Okay. So those stones actually do spell out Rasputin, but it's in the Cyrillic alphabet. I thought they were. The screen, in classic Spectrum fashion, has the game running in the top two-thirds of the display and the UI taking up the bottom third. The UI shows your life force as a bar, and then four different coloured eyes, and then your sword and shield, each with a burning candle above them. As UIs go, it's not the best. It doesn't really inform much information. The eyes are very poorly explained as to what they mean. I have no idea. They're all colored, something to do with the colors of the levels, probably. Who knows? So the first thing you want to do is turn around and walk out of the opening room. This leads to a kind of wraparound corridor. So the game is flick screen, walking off to the left or right, flicks to the next screen, and it will reveal a gate. And that gate will have one of the letters from the Cyrillic spelling of Rasputin, sort of floating up and down, probably some enemies as well. And going into these allows us to explore the world beyond and try and find the stones in order to stop Rasputin or something, going by those instructions. I don't know. The game is quite oblique in what it's asking you to do and what it's tasking you to do. And I guess figuring out what to do is the challenge, but it's not, it's not that those instructions are not particularly forthcoming in trying to work out, what's going on. Each screen will usually have some enemies meandering about outside in the courtyard. These are usually armed guards. They can be stabbed with your sword, and killing them leaves a little grave where they were killed. Although walking into that grave kills you. I found that annoying. Okay. In the levels, though, there are a weird assortment of oddities, enemy types, from small creatures to these weird human-sized automatons. They kind of wonder about, they can all be stabbed and killed. But remember, doing so, as it says in the instruction, lowers your sword power, lowers the candles, and you'll need to refill this by walking on certain stones. So get those candles back up. Mm. Now, all this does sound quite intriguing. All right. This is kind of this weird sort of weird story as you go around trying to kill Rasputin, get these spells and what have you, and all this sort of stuff. This list let down, though, by the fact that this is slow and unresponsive and the viewpoint doesn't work. So the C64 is clearly struggling here to render this at an acceptable frame rate. And this has the knock-on effect that the game is slow to respond to your inputs, which is never good. Considering that in certain levels there are rotating blocks, so you step on them and you'll rotate 90 degrees, and you've got to jump off them. Jumping off in the wrong direction will usually lead to death. So you have to actually press fire when you're actually facing the one before you, what direction you want to go in. That's how slow this takes to respond, because it doesn't respond immediately. I also forgot to mention that the game sort of takes place on floating platforms that are up in the sky. So if you fall off them, you fall into the clouds below, where you then get transported back up to the level. But the time it takes you to transport back up, while it takes on, your health bar is being depleted. So your health bar gets to zero. It runs out. If you hit an enemy, you basically lose health, and you are transported back to the beginning of that room with all the enemies respawned that you might have killed. That's annoying. So that's how you die, basically. You just, if you runs out, game over, you fall off, you get hit by too many enemies, it's game over. And when you get a game over screen, you get the completion percentage. I never got a very high completion percentage, I have to say. This is, I think, quite a hard and big game. But I think there's a lot of game to go at here, but it's just not really playable on the C64. Nah. It's a dull trudge-a-thon where you're meander about single color screens, fighting the controls at every moment. You flick to the left, sort of turn, and it'll flick twice, and you're like, oh, because it reads the. It's really tricky. Navigation is frustrating, and ultimately, it just wears you down. It's not left, right, it's turning, but it doesn't turn very well. It turns at 90 degree angles, it turns too many, and you want to stab someone, but you press fire and down at the same time, and it jumps. Oh, God. Mm. Okay, and it jumps into the enemy, and you're instantly dead, and yada, yada. Even the Spectrum and Amstrad version is not that fast either, but they are faster than this. So, you know, I don't... The other issue here is the viewpoint. In the more complex laid-out screens, you'll lose yourself behind the blocks, behind the platforms, and you'll find it very difficult to figure out where to move or jump to next because you can't see where you got to go. Yeah. And that's like, well, that's not good, is it? You know, you need to see where... The wrong direction will lead to death. So, you know, it just annoys. The only reason you're going to get to load this up is the music. You know, you'd load this up back in the day to listen to that piece of music if you didn't have it in a demo or something. It's a fantastic cupboard piece. It's kind of got that sort of Russian sort of styling, but it speeds up and it gets going. It It's fantastic. It's really great. You know, it goes along. The tempo gets going. It ramps up, unlike the game, which stays at a constant somnambulistic pace throughout. I remember having this back in the day and finding it impenetrable. I had this either on a budget or a copy or something. And even now, that remains the same. This isn't a game that Zap were missing out on. I mean, what would you give this? Somewhere in the 20s to 30s? Because it's not playable. It's not very good. And it's just, there's maybe game here. Maybe they would have probably given it higher. But really now, it's a pain to play this. It's just not suited to the machine. This, you know, the music's great. Listen to that. But avoid playing the game. Just turn it on and listen to the title screen. Because the game is very frustrating, very boring to get to try and make your way through. I didn't enjoy this at all. What about you?
I'm not going to kick this dead horse any more than we already have. The problem with this game was that it never lived up to the music, and it was never going to. I'd heard the music long before I'd heard of this game. I knew it was a game. I just never even thought about what it was. I assumed it was some kind of fun game by the music. Yeah. But you know, they say you should never meet your heroes, and I thought I wasn't sure what I was going to feel like when I played this game, knowing that it was so crap. I didn't know how I would feel about the music and everything, knowing that. But you know, we had Knuckle Busters, and that was kind of a unplayable game with great music. It's just a slow isometric horror lifted from other game. Platforms that probably do these things slightly less horribly, plonked on the C64 with no finesse or care, slow even on the first screen, which is never good. When you get a few things on, it's just horrible. Really good music, of course, but everything else is just naff and uncontrollable. It's not fun to jerk around and jump into things and fall off things and not have really any control or view of what you're seeing, and controlling that, rotating him on the spot and moving him around that in those sort of directions, that's my least favorite way to control anything. I'm always reminded of games like Spin Dizzy when we've got really good isometric games on the C64 and how fast and amazing it was. Yep. And then you look at this thing and you're fidgeting and twitching around. If it weren't for that Hubbard music, this would be dead and buried like Human Race, a game that just time would have forgotten. And I'm glad Zap didn't review it because they would have been of the same opinion. I don't doubt great music, you know, everything else, arseholes. So, nah, not for me. I hated it. But I'd happily listen to the music any day of the week. And I have done. I've spent many a year listening to the Rasputin music and never worried about what that crappy game was like. Now I know. I'm thinking, thank goodness for the music. At least I've got that to, you know, remember it by. Everything else, rubbish. So, no, not good.
No, Rasputin.
Yeah. It's just a pity because the Hubbard music on it is extraordinary for the time.
Yeah, it's great. Go. Really good. Yep. Yeah, one of his early greats. Yeah, it truly is. There we go, Rasputin. Impenetrable, incomprehensible, and not very good. No. Let's move on. We've still got some games left that Zap forgot. So let's continue. Let's get away from the drabness of Rasputin and maybe into something a bit more va-va-voom, hopefully. Let's see. Graham, it's over to you for the never reviewed anywhere Super Hang-On.
There may be reasons for that. this is Super Hang-On. Price unknown. I'm guessing it was probably, I'm going to put it at $9.95.
It is $9.99. I found it. It's very small print on the advert.
Published by Electric Dreams. Okay. It was also re-released later by the Hit Squad, ironically. Yeah. It was copyright Sega. Producer was Jonathan Deans, a software studios. The coder, Daryl Etherington. You remember Daryl? Jailbreak, RMS Titanic, all sorts of other horrors. You remember Jailbreak? Quality game
Jailbreak.
That was.
That was awful.
Well, you couldn't go... angles, could you? Can you go up right, left or right?
Yeah.
It was also Paul Freeman, who did Stormbringer, had something to do with this. How odd. And the graphics are attributed to somebody called Focus. I'm guessing they just didn't want to take ownership.
We've heard of Focus before.
So it just says Focus. It doesn't say a name, just says Focus.
They did Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah.
Enduro Racer. Nightmare.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Afterburner.
Yes, these things will come back to hurt you. And the musician was Steve Barrett. So Super Hang-On is a motorcycle racing arcade video game released by Sega as the sequel to Hang-On. It uses a simulated motorcycle arcade cabinet like the original game. An updated version was released in the arcades in 1981 as a limited edition Hang-On. The arcade mode in Super Hang-On is similar to the original Hang-On, but there is a choice of four tracks to race on, which are based on continents, each containing a different number of stages. Also, should the player reach the normal maximum speed of 280 kilometers per hour, a turbo button is enabled. Using this button allows the player to reach an even higher top speed of 324 kilometers per hour. In Japan, Game Machine listed Super Hang-On on their June the 1st, 1987 issue as being the most successful upright arcade unit of the month.
It was big. It was a big arcade.
It was a big old Sega thing. Now, I never liked the arcade, I'll be honest. I never liked it. I never liked motorbike racing games. I just couldn't do it. And I don't really like motorbikes that much, if I'm absolutely, really, brutally honest. So it never really had a lot of appeal for me. But nor do I want to see an arcade game of that magnitude kicked right in its balls. And that's exactly what happens with this conversion. This is the people who put this game together kicking everyone at Sega really hard in the nads. Like so hard that it takes your breath away even seeing it. Like when someone scores a really fast ace serve at tennis and everyone goes, ooh, that kind of thing.
Right.
So it says that according to the C64 blurb, right, where's the action? ? Hang on. Your objective is to race across four continents, each with a different skill class. Each continent contains a number of stages, and each stage must be completed before the timer counts down to zero. Any time made up at stage one is added to the time allowed on the next stage. Get it? Got it? Good. To qualify for the next class, you must complete all stages of a continent within the stage times. The higher the class, the more treacherous the track, and the more stages you must complete. To help you, your bike is fitted with the latest high-tech turbo, which you can kick into life once you reach your bike's regular top speed of 280 kilometers per hour. That's when you'll need all your wits about you. You really will, as your action really hots up. The rest is up to you. Check out the controls, then give it your best shot, if you've got what it takes, that is. Okay, let's go. Right. A short while after loading commences, the screen will display a map of the world, roughly divided into four continents. These are Africa, that's the beginner class of six stages, Asia, Junior class, 10 stages, America. Senior class, 14 stages, and Europe. Expert class, 18 stages. If you have the diskette version of Super Hang-On, you may now select which continent you wish to race across. The continent of your choice will now load into your computer memory. Okay, there you go. It says, when the continent of your choice is loaded into the computer, a screen will display a menu with the available play options. Type the number, or where applicable, the key listed next to your desired option. I don't know what that pertains to, and I don't care. So this is meant to be a motorbike racing game, and it's in the tradition of all racing games around the mid-80s. So vehicle at the bottom, roadway that you race down, something in the distance, and bendy roads, and Outrun, and every other game that's like this, that looks like this, except this is a motorbike instead of a car, and it was on a hydraulic motorbike on the arcade. So it was mm-hmm. It was that. It was Sega's version of Outrun, but for a motorbike, with the same kind of vibe, especially this one, which is more akin to that kind of idea. So there is a loading screen for this when it starts, and it's a bit off. So when it comes, it's like it's been badly scanned.
Yeah.
You're looking at it thinking, something's not right here. Something's screwy about this. Then you get to the crappy map selection screen, which appears. I've called it the crappy mappy, because after that you get like the logo and credits, and it's hard to describe this. When the title screen appears for this, it's just a load of text on the screen, like a really bad outline typeface with text mm-hmm. on the screen on a blue background. Now, it's not the Commodore font, but it may as well have been, and it's really crap. Then you've got the map screen, and when you choose the map screen, you've got to choose them with the F keys, which is quite hard to see, actually, that quite hard to read what it is, because it's not very well drawn.
No.
Then you get the music selection screen after you've chosen to start the game. Now, this is the stupidest music selection screen on Earth for two reasons. The key one being that when you choose the music, you can't hear it.
Yep. what am I choosing?
So what difference does it make what you choose? So I don't know whether Sunset Rider is going to sound good, or whether I should be listening to Wheel Spin or Pumping Gas. Pumping Gas sounds, it's that soundtrack of someone farting a lot. Yeah. So you get to choose from these four musics. Now, on the screen grab I've chosen, for reasons I'm not sure of, one of them's vanished, but I think it's because it flashes when you go to select them. I just happen to screen grab it when it's, so I don't know what the top one was called. Anyway, I'm not sure. I must have chosen that one. But you can't hear them.
It was Dirt Track.
Dirt Track. So you can't hear them. So there's a music selection screen where you can't hear the music you're selecting. That's stupid. There's a word for that. Even Outrun. I mean, at least it had a selection screen where you could hear the music before you actually selected it. So this is just, it's arbitrary. What difference does it make? How would you know if you'd chosen Wheel Spin, if it was playing Wheel Spin? Because you've never heard it, so you wouldn't know, would you? So it doesn't matter.
No. Nope.
So once you get past that, then the game begins. And I have to tell you, this has got to be, I think, one of the worst things I have ever seen on the C64, ever. It is shocking how bad this is. And I mean on a scale of bad that is very rare. Now, we very rarely come across a game that is a legitimate attempt at an arcade conversion that is so unsuccessful every way that it can be, it beggars belief. I mean, to the point where I was convinced that the guy's eyes were working inverted because his perspective's in reverse. It's absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. So when the game starts, you've got like a bad gantry that's drawn up out of grey, what looks like grey blocks. Well, they're grey sort of see-through. I don't know how you describe them. It's just meant to be a gantry. There's nothing on it, though. Above that, you've got a UI, which is a complicated array of text that's splattered across the screen. Like somebody kept thinking of things to put on it. So they just, oh, just put it over there. I know, put it over there. Put it over there. So you've got the one up, the score. You've got then your time and then the score again for some reason. Then you've got your speed in kilometers per hour. And then there's a random other score at the top right, which I'm not even sure what that's there for. Then you've got the stage that you're on, and then you've got the course that you're on, which is written, and it just says Course Europe. But you know you're on that course because you chose it at the start. You don't need to have that there.
No.
Why would you need confirmation of the very thing you've just chosen? Then it says get ready above that, and then is the counter in the middle of all it. It's just an array of numbers and text all over the place with no coordination. It's like someone had positioned, you know, when you position documents in the old days, someone would use the space bar instead of using proper tabbing or proper spacing in the old. It's when somebody did that and then they tried to open it on another screen and the formatting was all over the place. It's like that. It's like somebody hadn't thought about the layout. They're just going, oh, I don't know, it'll probably sort itself out. Below that is your raceway road. There isn't a road. There's no road. There's lines on either side represented in glorious brown and green. And then you've got a green background, which is meant to be your road, but it's just green, like a green stripy thing, I guess. And then inexplicably, you've got the blue sky. And then below that, you've got these mountains in the horizon that just stop before they get to the edge. It just stops about an inch from the side of the screen of the game because they didn't draw enough of it. If you look at the very first screen when you start at the start of the race where you've got the gantry, the background exactly fits into the gantry view. Right. And then as soon as you accelerate through the gantry, the background doesn't change. It just stays there.
Yeah.
So, and then you'll start the game and the race. Now, it's hard to describe this in any way that can make sense. You've got giant grey lampposts with green bulbs in there that don't illuminate anything. Why? And clearly they've gone for the old four colour trick. So the four colours here, you've got green, brown, grey, and I'm guessing probably, I think it's red, like a dark red. Those are the four colours they've chosen for this medium res catastrophe. So you end up with green mountains with brown mountaintops, grey lampposts with green bulbs that don't illuminate anything anyway. Why would they? And then you've got this roadway. Now, it's a classic roadway in the sense that you've got the road edging stripes. So that gives it the effect. But that's it. Then your motorbike in the middle. Now, the motorbike doesn't look like a motorbike. You do not look like you're on a super motorbike. In fact, I'm not even sure what you look like.
Someone said you look like a totem pole.
Yeah, a totem pole or maybe Doctor Who's sonic screwdriver if you held it up vertically.
Yeah.
And what it ain't is a motorbike of any description. Worse than that is that the motorbikes that you're racing against, it's hard to explain what happens here. They get bigger as they get further away.
It's that off small, don't they, in the distance. Yeah. And then they go grudly massive. They get, only when they're banking, though. Only when they're turning.
When they're turning, they get bigger.
Stupid.
It's really weird. So the perspective goes wild. So the mountains don't change. The roadway doesn't change. The lampposts sort of shoot towards you, but they're not right. And then the motorbikes get bigger as they get further away. It broke my brain. I'm like, ah! And then I mean, I don't know if you did this, but I wanted to see what the crash animation was like.
Ugh.
And I absolutely howled because I hit the lamppost and this just went, hey! This giant motorbike, well, not a giant, but this sort of motorbike rider flew forwards and this thing sort of shot in the air and then it was like, end. I was like, what is this? I mean, goodness me, they couldn't have got this. This is catastrophic. This is catastrophic failure of epic proportions. I mean, people are going to pay. When we criticize Ocean, but even, I mean, this is bad, even by their standards for game. This is so bad.
Than anything they've put out.
I mean, this is the same. This is worse than Enduro Racer for me. And Enduro Racer was crap. But this is, at least if it's either as bad as or worse, because there's no lessons that, I mean, remember that, at least Enduro Racer, they tried to have jumps, right? Remember?
Yeah, I think this might be running on the same engine, you know. I think this is based...
I don't doubt it. So this game has got so many issues. I mean, aside from the fact that it looks nothing like the arcade, plays nothing like the arcade, is unplayable because it jerks around. You can't control the bike. It flits around. The road squiggles around uncontrollably. The stages make no sense. The timer doesn't always work, by the way. My timer just stopped for about 30 seconds. So there's something wrong. Fundamentally, there's bugs in the game. The motorbikes get bigger as they get further away, which broke my brain. The mountains are too small for the scenery. The grass is the same as the road, and there's no roadway. It's just road siding, side stripes. And everything is crap. Nothing looks like the arcade. Nothing. There's nothing of the arcade in this. It's embarrassing, this game. It's an embarrassing game. All the other versions actually look okay. Spectrum version looks all right. The Amstrad version isn't too bad. Of course, the later versions. This is a real embarrassment for Commodore 64. No wonder they never sent it to anyone to review. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely dreadful. And it's also been voted on many websites that I came across as one of the worst games on the C64 of all time. There's a review of it on one of the YouTube channels of a person that was asked to review it. And it's just, they said, this is like C64 horror. It's so bad. And they're not wrong. It's got so many issues. It looks dreadful. The sprites fidget and inexplicably get bigger the further away you get. The background runs out before it gets to the border.
Yeah.
Bad lampposts. And it's not often you say that about a game, but if you're going to put lampposts in, make them lamppost-like. Just you don't need light, don't need green in them. Why have you done that? Have you not seen lampposts before? Where do you go where you've seen that? Where have you been? What planet are you from? The edges of the road are green, brown, and grey, and that's all you get edges. The UI is so crap. The outline font should be banned from all time and space. The speed of the motorbike doesn't work. It's stupid. When you do the turbo, it becomes uncontrollable and the road just wiggles and gets silly, and all the motorbikes that zoom towards you get bigger anyway. So it breaks your face. It breaks your brain. There's no road to speak of. The background's all one colour. It flickers every now and again. The timer stopped functioning. I couldn't control it. At one point, I got stuck turning left and I was just facing left even though I was going forward for ages. Everything is crap. And when you fly off in the end, which you'll want to do, it's laughable. And even the music is shrill. And by the way, one of the things I noted about this was that when you were going around the corners and you get that shrill sound, it blends in with the music because the music's so crap. So it's not on purpose. The screeching of your tires becomes the same as the music you're listening to, which tells you how crap that is. Utterly, utterly awful. I mean, goodness me, I don't know what Zap would have given this as a percentage. I can't think they would have given it anything good at this stage. Rignall would have torn this apart. This is so bad an arcade conversion, and he liked arcades. This would have been given low 4 or 5. So me, I'd have given this 1, just so it could be in the magazine, so I could give them a slap and tell them how crap it was. Utterly, utterly awful. This is so bad. This is the end of Casino. We haven't visited the end of Casino for a while, have we? But this is the end of Casino again. It's come back. We brought it back. Now someone's beating up his brother in front of his eyes, and you know, and they're buried him while he's still breathing. That's this game. It's the baseball bat sequence. It's horrible.
I hated it.
It's the worst arcade conversion. Actually, not the worst. One of the worst arcade conversions on the C64 I think they'll ever be. And it deserves no place. I'm glad that Zap never saw this. I'm glad it never really made the light of day because it's horrible. What did you think?
Oh God, where do you start with this? I mean, it didn't get reviewed anywhere. Clearly, they knew. So it's like, we can't send this anywhere. So we can't put this in front of people because if they do, they're like, we're never going to sell anyone. You're releasing this at full price in 1987. You've got on the market at this point, you've got Super Cycle, Pit Stop 2, Speed King, you know, even the original Pole Position, Great American Cross Country Road Race. The C64 is not wanting for decent racers. There's quite a few of them. I mean, Super Cycle shows that you could have done a version of this that was all right.
Yeah.
So, you know, if they'd just done it like Super Cycle, but they didn't. They did it with totem poles and stuff. I don't know. they clearly knew that they couldn't let magazines see this. It would have just crashed and burned, if you forgive the pun. There's an advert, right? On the Lemon, they've got the advert. It's a two-page advert, which is running the magazine, right? And across the top it says, and this I quote, it says, "The best racing game we've ever played, even better than Outrun." And underneath it quotes Zap 64's Day at the Arcade. So they're quoting a magazine that will never review it. The thing is, but also just going on about the arcade game. And
it's terrible.
It's just ridiculous. I can't get over this. It's one of the worst things I've ever seen at full price. Worse than Enduro Racer, probably worse than Chase HQ. Might be the worst racing game we've seen.
Yeah.
Why do the bikers become huge when you're approaching them around a corner? They start off small and go, and they go, and then get smaller as they come back towards you.
I don't know.
Somebody's really mucked up the frame animation on the sprites. Like, why is that one in there? No, what have you done? Why is there no sense of speed? You go from 0 to 280, whatever it is, in like a second, and then you like hold down the fire button to go to 324. There's just no sense of speed in this. It's just ridiculous. No. None of them look like bikes. What are they? What is this? Is bad. Yeah, 1. I'd have given it a 1. Yeah. Oh, what a horror! What a genuine horror!
So bad.
And what rubs it more in? The Spectrum version's really good.
Yeah,
you know, it's like for a Spectrum version, everything's sort of drawn in lines and stuff, but it looks like you went, what's that? I went, oh, it looks like Super Hang-On. Yeah. This looks like fucking, I don't know, Super Turd.
You're not wrong.
Super Totem Pole. I mean, that's the game, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what I was expecting from this. I kind of I'd heard comments that it wasn't very good, but I'd never played it because it never sort of arrived anywhere, but phew.
It stinks, doesn't it? It's a stinky.
I'm gladding that, you know, it may not have ever got reviewed in magazines. I'm surely people, like you said, people looked at it on YouTube, but now we've looked at it as well and given it the kicking it so richly deserves.
Yes, I believe we have.
Yeah, there you go.
Good.
That's Super Cack-On. rubbish, bloody rubbish. Let's move on. We've still got one game that Zap never looked at, and we'll get to that one next. So our final game is Transformers. This is Transformers. This is 1985. It came out December 85. I want you to keep that December 1985 date in mind as we discuss this. Okay. This is from Ocean Software. This is their version of the Transformers, robots in disguise, more than meets the eye, so on and so on and so on. Ages back, 86, we looked at the terrible Activision game based on the toys. We had the sad robot on the floor crying.
We did, yeah. It was very bleak.
But there was another one. There's another Transformers game, and here it is. I mean, this was actually reviewed in a few magazines at the time. CMVG giving it 6 out of 10. Commodore Horizons, don't even remember that magazine. They gave it 8 out of 10. Commodore User gave it a 3 out of 5. And Your Computer gave it a 4 out of 5.
Okay.
So it got an overall score of 70%.
Not shabby.
It's not. The game is the old school. So this game has the old school Ocean Loader music of the time. Version 1, I think. It's the fast one. That one. I think, yeah, so it's good. And it's got an okay loading screen. Although one of the Autobots looks like it's falling over.
It does, yeah.
The one on the right is like,
Yes, it does.
Oh, what's happened? Someone's pushed given the controls in this game, I wouldn't be surprised if they were. The game itself was coded by Denton Designs. It was produced by David Ward. It's got graphics by Simon Butler and music by Fred Gray. So the loading screen is also the title screen when it eventually loads. And there's no options. It's just, it's loaded. Okay. So pressing fire starts the game. But first, there is a story. And that story is as follows. Earth has been invaded by powerful robots from the planet Cybertron. The battle rages between the forces of good, Autobots, and evil, Decepticons. Transform from robot to earthly machine as you take the role of the heroic Autobots in their desperate struggle. The Autobots have an energy crisis and must work as a team to repel the attack of the evil Decepticons while collecting the 4 pieces of the Autobot Energon Cube and transporting them to Autobot Center. The Decepticons will attempt to steal these cubes, and it will be only a matter of time before they succeed. In the long struggle against the evil forces, only 5 Autobots remain. Optimus Prime, the leader, Jazz, Hound, Mirage, and Bumblebee. Whereas the Decepticons have perfected robo-cloning, reproducing any of their number which you destroy. Handy that. The 5 heroes have a daunting task ahead, but gain some advantage from the defensor pods under which they may seek shelter and regain their strength. And that's it.
Okay, short and sweet.
Short and sweet. So, the game starts with an okay, but short rendition of the famous Transformers theme, about 30 seconds. What we have here is basically a multi-directional scrolling collection game, I guess that's what you call it. So the game is split into two, where it's got the game window at the top and the UI is at the bottom. The first thing you must do when the game starts is select which Transformer you are going to initially control. You do this by moving a crosshair over the 5 of them at the bottom of the screen. You've got little sprites. So little sprites across the bottom, little sprite icons. And you can see that Denton Designs had just done Shadowfire when this came out. There's some Shadowfire DNA here.
Yeah, definitely.
Once you pick who you want to do, the screen at the top where the game window is will then scroll to who you have picked, and your Autobot will emerge from the defensor pods where they are taking refuge. Like they'll just sort of scroll up. It's like a dustbin or a Dalek. And there you are. So at this point, the UI changes to show 3 bars, your shields, your firepower, and your strength. Now, I get what the shields and firepower are for, but it's not clear what your strength is for. I don't know.
No.
I don't know what that one is. The UI also tells you who you are controlling, not that it really matters, your score and the present high score. Once chosen, you must navigate the maze-like world of platforms in order to find the four lost pieces of the Energon cube and bring them back to the center of the world. There's a little sort of square in the middle. You bring them back to that and it automatically puts them in. Controls in this are fiddly, to say the least. So when you're a normal transformer, so you're in your robot mode and you're running along the platforms, you can run left and right along the platforms, as I said, and hold up or down as you approach stairs to climb them. So you're sort of pushing the diagonals like stairs, you can go up and down. When you're standing facing a different direction, you can push up any time and you'll start flying. And you control this with up and down and left and right. You're sort of flying around. There's inertia and there's gravity, so you'll be falling. So you've got to combat that all the time. Fire is shoot. So when you're sort of facing left or right or flying around, you press fire to shoot. So whilst on a platform, you can also turn to face the screen. So basically when you're facing to the left, if you push tap to the right once, you won't turn right. You'll sort of turn to 90 degrees to face out of the screen.
Yeah.
And at that point you can choose if you turn to face the screen, pressing fire, you can then, you'll go down to the menu where you can choose to be another Autobot. You don't want to do that though while you're, you know, while you're out in the open, because you're going to get constantly hit by the Decepticons who are flying about. So you really want to take your present transformer to an empty defensor pod, and then standing under one of those, facing the screen and pulling down, will sort of drop the defensor pod and you'll go into hiding and you'll replenish your energy and stuff like that you might have lost. You can also, whilst facing the screen and not in a defensor pod, pull down, and that transforms you into that particular Transformers car version. So the big truck for Optimus Prime, Bumblebee, the red, you know, the yellow thing, whatever it is. And you can then zoom about on the platform to your heart's content, but you can't fire anymore. As you're moving about, you'll be set upon by the evil Decepticons who fly about and shoot at you and just be do this random flying enemy, you know, annoyances. They just whittle your energy down, and they don't sort of kill you immediately. They'll just whittle your energy down, and there you go. Should you take too much damage, then like I said, you need to go into a defensive pod to recharge before heading out to battle again. Should you manage to find all parts of the energy cube and retrieve them back to the square, then you are awarded bonus points. You get to hear the music again. Before doing it all over again, it just loops.
You do.
Just keeps going.
It does.
It's a pretty simple affair, this. That's just a huge pain in the ass to play, really. Controls, as noted, are fiddly. Death is only moments away at any given moment. So you die by trying to land on a slightly inclined slope.
True.
You know, robots are clearly just set to explode if they can't land on a flat plane. Giant robots destroyed by a gentle incline. You know, these are rubbish. How have they survived? It's stupid. You can die by simply brushing a platform when you are flying. That's stupid. You can die as a car by falling off a platform any distance. That's stupid.
Yep.
The scrolling of the screen only starts when you're very close to the edge as well, so it's impossible to see what's coming up. So death is usually moments away as you clip an edge, and your cast of five Transformers is whittled down to nothing, and the screen shakes and you're taken back to the title screen. It's a very punishing, unforgiving game, this, and very unpleasant to play. The visuals, they're okay in that bitty style that Denton Designs kind of used in Shadowfire and Enigma Force. The sprites, they kind of look like they're not terrible. They're little sprite Transformers. Yeah. They're okay. They're nice. My animation's fine if a bit jerky, but it's fine.
Yeah.
The background pipes and the platforms quite nicely drawn in that kind of sort of blue, sort of metallic style. And that's all right. But like I said, it's just an absolute pain to play this. Why have a strength and shield value when collision with anything in the environment is instant death? I don't get it. Because surely just hitting something maybe just knocks your shield down or knocks your strength down, that useless icon, which no one that no one knows about. I think, well, I'll come to what I think in a minute. It's obvious because the game is unbalanced. And with a fairly small playing area and only four pieces of cube to collect, if you could actually survive for more than a couple of seconds, then you complete this in about 2 minutes.
Yeah, true.
There's very little to do here. So they've made you die at the touch of a feather, which makes no real sense and robs the game of any kind of feeling of being a giant transforming robot. Even though they're little tiddly robots, you're still a giant robot, no matter what the scale is and the, you know, how far you're zoomed out. You're supposed to be a big giant transformer. You know, there's nothing here. There's very little game here. And this is a very early example of something being made and knocked out quickly for Christmas.
Yeah.
All the reviews were February 86. So this was released in December 85, ripe for those Christmas pennies. You can see why it didn't get to Zap, because I think they would have absolutely torn this to pieces. And I think that the reason, you know, 2 months later, all the reviews come out, but by then the damage is done. Transformers were one of the big toys of, you know, 84, 85,
they
massive.
Really
the game comes out with it. It's like, oh, we've got you the game. The game's on, you know, your new Commodore, your Spectrum version. Like, this is an early example of what we've seen recently from Ocean. You know, get the game out quick, get it out. Don't matter what it's like. just get it out so we can, you know, rip people off. And that's what they've done. And I remember that. I think that there may have been more planned for this. I reckon Denton Designs probably had a bit more planned for this. You know, there's things what you can do, your health, like I said, shield, strength, and all that kind of stuff. But what is here is rubbish because it plays like a dog and kills you when a breath of wind touches the face of Optimus Prime.
Yep.
That's 0-2 in Transformers games we've looked at. And it's more shoddy business practices. It's just another example of that, an early one. And I know this because my brother bought it at the time.
No.
So we had this. I remember at the time thinking it was terrible. It's poorly tuned. I think Denton Designs, to give them some credit, I reckon they had more planned. I reckon there was ideas, you know, you could do this and there's probably more to do in this and you could kind of see it because there's no reason to switch between Transformers. They don't do anything. They don't feel different.
Yeah.
They're the same. So I think this was just, no, just get it out. We need it out. It needs to be out for Christmas. Bad business practices. We've seen it promotion all the time and is another example of it. I didn't like this. It's not very good to play. It looks and sounds okay, but it's terrible to play. What did you think?
A music for start. No, Transformers has got like Transformers, robots in disguise, you know. It's good.
It's all right.
But that version isn't very good. It just drills into your skull. No, it's not very good. Stupid controls that see you flying and dying almost instantly. So as soon as you take to the air, dead.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just awkward. And it's just kind of kills the fun of it. The fun of a game of Transformers is being a Transformer and transforming. You need to be able to do those two things. No matter how the game is and what the game is about, you need to be able to do those two things. And you can't really do any of those things for very long and have much fun with it.
No.
Instant death games like this, where it's just repeated, and you can die quickly as every Transformer. Great. So that's what your ambition was. I guess the run and gun sort of idea, running across those scrolling backgrounds. Why do that? They're road vehicles. Put them on a bloody road. Why have you got platforms for the Transformers? The Transformers that are known for going on the road, not flying through the air. I know they can fly. I know that. But the Transformers, they're trucks and vehicles. So don't have them jumping on platforms. It's really stupid logic.
Mm-hmm.
And the scrolling was okay. But the sprites are tiny, but passable, I suppose. I'm just not really sure how this falls into being a Transformers game because you don't really need to transform. And if you do, it's punished by instant death more often than not.
Mm-hmm.
The layout of the levels was a nightmare for the flight parts. In fact, You couldn't fly properly because of the level design, and you couldn't drive properly because of the level design. So therefore, you couldn't be a Transformer in a game called Transformers.
Nope.
So, and the parts where you're running are so badly animated and horrible. It's just there's no care in it.
Nope.
So it's just not a very good game. I know it's early on and early doors and everything else. I'll have to look at the Spectrum version. It suffers from the same problem. I just don't get why somebody thought that a Transformers game where you emerge out of a corn silo and then just bumble along platforms, crashing and dying a lot, would be fun. But I suppose you can be a Transformer, and that's all the remit that was given to this game. Just, you know, as long as they can buzz about a bit being a Transformer, that's all good. But it's not good enough, is it? So the Transformers was quite a big deal back then. So much so that it's, you know, when it was relaunched and given the modern special effects treatment, they really went to town on it, you know, and invented some special effects for it, and they're amazing. Mm-hmm. So there's longevity in it. It was never something that you was just going to brush off. But it's been given the classic ocean. We bought the license. Let's fuck the game. So that's what they've done. No care and attention in it. Doesn't matter. It's just how they treat all the licensed products, and clearly has been since the beginning. Pump it out. Someone will buy it because it's got Transformers on it. Who cares whether they like it or not? What difference does it make? There's enough game in it for them to be able to whiz about. They're never going to really want to do it because who's going to want to go through levels and levels and levels of flying around as a Transformer on tiny little roads?
No,
it's naff. And $8.95, well, of course it is, because, you know, they need to milk as much money out of that as possible. No wonder they didn't send it to Zap for review, because Zap would have called out for what it is. This was before they were bunging them with envelopes of cash. So they'd have just called out and said, this is crap.
Yeah.
And they would have been right to do so, but, you know, they sneakily didn't send it, did they? Been lost in the archives a little bit, this Transformers, hasn't it? But just rubbish. And what a shame that there hasn't been a good Transformers game then, at least on the old consoles. Don't know if they ever did a late one on one of the more modern consoles, maybe. I don't know that, but
there's a good Transformers games on the PS on the PS2, and there's some the 360
well,
couple of guns, War for Cybertron and stuff.
Yeah, so it came good in the end, but it took that. Yeah. And I don't remember if there's an arcade Transformers either. Maybe there is, but
I don't know.
Anyway, weirdly,
the PS2 one was made by Melbourne House.
Yeah,
and it was a technical marvel. Well, I remember at the time.
If you think what we said about what we say about these things still stands. I know this is 1985, late 1985, 1986, but what we said about this still stands. You're not that far from Green Beret, for a start, which if you just took out the Green Beret and put in a truck that transformed into a plane, which, so you've really, you've got a side-scrolling shoot 'em up, yeah, really. And it wouldn't be that hard to, if you just took the backgrounds from Green Beret and then substitute the sprites out for something that looked like Optimus Prime. I know it's, you know, in the world of our imaginations, we can think of anything. But my point is that that's only a few months apart. So all of the stuff you need to be able to do that is out there and there. So why this? Why this thing?
Don't know.
But it's because this was Spectrum first, and this lends itself to the way Spectrums render graphics. Yeah. So you can see that. So it's been designed on a Spectrum. The Spectrum doesn't have the kind of graphic capabilities of the C64. It doesn't have any software, any hardware scrolling. It doesn't have all those things. And it lends itself to having little bits of platform dotted about. You look at a lot of those early Spectrum games like that. They're all kind of empty. Transam, Attic Attack, large volumes of empty space with stuff around the edges. Well, that's what a lot of these Spectrum games are. And they have that weird three plate, that weird way of rendering the screen, the kind of three blocks.
Yeah.
So it sort of lends itself to that. But even that's no excuse. Just shows you that they just pump these things out. Just, oh, stick it on the C64 and whatever. Nah.
Yeah.
It's a shame, but you know, there you go.
You got Denton Designs at the helm, so they could have gone down something like the Shadowfire route with this, with you controlling some sort of strategy top from... give it all the different Transformers, different abilities and stuff like they have. You know, you could have, with a bit of thought, you could have had that, but...
Yep. And it's all there for you, isn't it? It's not like there wasn't a rich Transformer-based universe. I mean, even if you just had the main characters, but it's like they did with the He-Man game and with Tom and Jerry and every single one of these where there's been a really strong license and a whole series of stuff behind it to draw from. They just ignore all that and just go, just have them moving around. You know, and that's kind of, I think, where it got to with the design on this. Just make it move around and then release it. Well, what a shame.
Indeed, what a shame. And that's it. There you go. That's your six games that Zap forgot.
It's
been quite an interesting journey. There's been some interesting ones, but what do we look at? So we've looked at the human race.
We did.
Which is too hard. Too hard for its own good. Yeah, ridiculously stupid.
If you like being a monkey for a while, but that was quite fun on monkey level.
Then we looked at Mikey, which we
enjoyed. That was quite good, though.
That was good. Yeah, that was a really good one. Then we looked at Thanatos.
That was crap. where they never saw the full dragon because it was always off to the left.
Yeah. Then we looked at Rasputin.
Very slow.
Then we looked at the best one, Super Hang-On.
That's the worst game on the C64. I think it's easier contender, isn't it? It's bad, if not worse than Enduro Racer.
Really bad. Yeah. And then finally we looked at Transformers by Ocean. So there you go. Yep. And that's it. We hope you've enjoyed that. We've quite enjoyed it. It's been quite nice sort of doing a sort of bit of a random assortment of games.
And it's volume one, I suppose, because there's loads more games that they forgot. So we'll probably do one of these again, I'd have thought.
Absolutely, yeah. They're kind of nice to sort of go off and do every now and again. And like I said, we've been asked to look at games that weren't covered. So you ask and we do. It keeps us going. There's loads more of these that weren't picked up. So I'm sure we'll do that again. But next week, normal service should resume and we'll be back. We'll be back with April. Are we finishing off April next week?
I think it's finishing off April, isn't it? Yeah, so I think so.
We're finishing off April or we're starting May. I can't remember where this one's slotting in.
The reason this has been done now, basically,
because, you know, again, with life is getting in the way. So, yeah, work and stuff gets in the way. So we do these episodes sort of slot in when we're not around. So we're either finishing off April or we're starting May.
One of the two,
but we'll be there. So, as ever, that's been quite fun. And as ever, I have been Adrian Mills.
And I've been Graham Raddings.
And you've been listening to Zap to the Past, Do the Games That Zap Forgot. And we will see you again next week. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the Zap to the Past podcast. We hope you enjoyed our deep dive into the world of Commodore 64 games, as well as the music, films and TV from around the 1980s, driven, of course, by the issue of Zap 64 magazine published at that time. We will return with a whole new batch of games and stuff to talk about next week. Until then, if you want to listen to or download previous episodes of Zap to the Past, and why wouldn't you, they can all be found on our website at zaptothepast.com, as well as being available on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Deezer, Audible, Player FM, and, well, pretty much anywhere where we can upload them. By the way, we do always love to hear from our amazing listeners, so if you'd like to contact us about anything in the podcast or beyond, you can do so by emailing us at zaptothepast@gmail.com. We're also active on Twitter under @ZapToThe, as well as Facebook, Instagram, and most social media platforms. Just search for Zap to the Past and you'll find us. Oh, and if you like the podcast and what we're doing, please do like, share, review, rate us. It really helps. Something, apparently. The Zap to the Past podcast is written and produced by Adrian Mills and Graham Raddings and recorded at Flakybits 2.0 Studio. All opinions expressed are those of the writers, and while we indeed love Zap 64 magazine, the Zap to the Past podcast is not affiliated with it in any way. Stay safe, see you next time, and remember, we play these games so you don't have to.